Hey there, people of the interwebs. It's me, Brandon Noel. This episode, we're discussing The Walking Drum by Louis L'Amour, most known for his Western novels. This is more of a fantasy, medieval fantasy kind of thing. He steps out of his comfort zone and brings his realism and grit to kind of a fantasy setting. I really enjoyed this book. I hope you check it out if you haven't already read The Walking Drum by Louis L'Amour. Once again, if you want to help support this podcast, patreon.com/destinycomics. You can get everything from bookmarks, which every voracious reader needs, to getting these episodes early, as well as just, you know, generally supporting the arts, which is always good. Without further ado, The Walking Drum by Louis L'Amour.
Laugh has been described as a chuckle.
Right.
the British guy, I know.
Yeah, you know, that one British guy. Well, the British teenager.
If you feel the need to read it, check it out from the library.
Support your local.
Told the parents. No. And we are the bookies to.
I like
Opa.
It.
Whoa.
Opa! Well, it went up. May there be a road.
May there be a road.
Hopefully I can get home.
One of us will drive you.
Ooh.
Oh! Oh! Right back.
Whoa!
Am I blind?
Double shot.
Ooh.
I sipped.
Ooh. I got halfway down before I had to stop.
Tastes like black licorice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it tastes like ouzo.
Yeah.
It tastes like ouzo.
Cracker.
Anyone have a lighter? Can I breathe brighter? Anyone want something on a cracker?
Oh, that's got a lingering taste.
Oh, yeah.
And we are the bookies.
What a world.
That's really warm all the way down.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Man. I can take my sweater off now.
I think I can see God.
It's not down yet all the way.
I can taste colors.
Oh, wow. You drink root beer after that? And that's really interesting.
I'm going to try it.
Oh, I don't have root beer. Thanks.
I'm not going to waste it, but
that God.
Wow.
Yeah.
It gets cold real quick.
Okay.
Oh, I'm getting some.
Can you give me some, too?
I don't want anymore.
Can you give me some? Oh, no root beer?
It's over here by the crackers.
Oh. Oh, you want some more?
No, root beer.
Root beer.
I got two.
Although I did finish mine.
Are you guys some root beer? I'll have some ginger ale.
Talk about the emotional damage.
You gotta wonder how some people come up with different liquors. Like, let's mix together gasoline and turpentine and see what happens, you know?
Well, they said that the typical story for drinking this is to celebrate, like, something in your life. Like, you got a promotion at work, or you got married, or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And then there's also the other one that says...
We survived COVID. Woo!
That, to celebrate that, to forget something, like you got fired from your job or a divorce or something.
So what they're saying is drinking is time, both for good events and bad events.
And by the time, if you drink that bottle, you will forget.
Yeah.
You'll forget what you're celebrating.
Yeah.
It definitely has a licorice-y taste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Well, you guys can have the rest of it. Well, oh. That's why I was passing it over.
I got my tea. She's got a root beer.
Yeah, I'm going to... I want some...
Oh, okay. Not that much left. So.
No, it's fine. I got
sure
root beer.
Sure. All right.
Well, that's root beer.
Oh, no, I got it, so.
Okay. I wanted RC.
Okay.
RC.
Is there any RC left?
Oh, yeah. Lots of RC.
Nobody likes RC, Dave. Just
you. I used to be my favorite.
I didn't do the whole thing.
But after COVID, I can't stand cola anymore.
Maybe half a
really?
Beer?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like it changed your taste buds?
It changed my
taste. You take enough time off of soda, it doesn't.
And I talked to my doctor about it, and he says if it hasn't gone back to normal now, it's probably permanent.
And that was... Only after 6 months.
If you don't drink it,
now,
I won't care.
So
it only cost 403 rubles.
So did it like change the taste of it for you, and now you don't like it?
Or, the whole thing has got
like 13. So what does it taste like now? Rubles is
$1. Imagine the cheapest cola you can think of.
Yeah.
And it tastes like that.
$30.
Yeah. See, for me, that's like Shasta. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, worse than Shasta.
It's not
yeah, it has a chemical flavor now.
Oh, I hate that.
And as do most sodas, except for Dr. Pepper.
Put that back in the fridge.
There's dark chocolate.
If I feel like that drink just cleared up any chest congestion I might have had.
Yeah. You didn't have any, but if I had some, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saving this for another cold.
There you go. Right?
I think I'm going to have one tomorrow.
Actually, you take that with a half a cup of that with a half a cup of boiling water and just sit over it. And breathe it in, and that'll clear up anything.
This kind of tastes like green NyQuil.
It
tastes better than NyQuil.
Oh, I think we discovered what NyQuil really is.
Mm-hmm. So, we are the bookies.
Let's talk about books.
Books, bitches.
There was debate. Who recommended? Was this you, or was it
Dave?
Dave.
There was no debate. I knew.
Okay, you mainly knew.
It was on the paper.
Well, it's a Louis L'Amour book, so I assume Justin.
Yep, there's all those
Dave. All right, Dave. Why did you put this book in the hat?
Why did you do this to us? When I was living at my other place, there goes Bonnie drinking some Turkish Rocky.
Yeah, what was the drink again? Turkish?
Rocky.
Rocky.
R-A-K-I.
Say Rotgut.
Basically. I'm gonna go out on the limb and say that's probably pronounced Roki. Roki something.
Maybe I don't know. It's R A K
I. It tasted a lot better than I imagined.
I liked it.
It tasted
better
like,
than vodka.
It's strong.
I have a Turkish brother-in-law. I should talk to him about this.
Flavor. This had flavor.
Yeah.
But anyway, when I was living at my old house, I was driving home one day. And it looked like someone like was moving out, and there was like a whole bunch of stuff at the curb. And I went to go check it out, and there was like a box of books in there. And I said, okay, so I just took the whole box,
right?
Because we were in the I was already in the book club by then, so I just took the whole box, and there was like three or four Louis L'Amour books, and this was in that pile.
Mm.
Okay.
And the reason why I chose this one because this is his only historical fantasy book he ever wrote.
Yeah. I'm going to say, we'll talk about it, but this is not a fantasy.
Mm. Historical fiction.
Yeah. Historical fiction, action, adventure.
Yeah, I call it a historical fantasy to me because it's not real. But.
I would say, I think I read somewhere that he was planning on writing
more
books.
Yes, he was planning on number two for this, but it never happened.
Mm. Mm. Notably, and what was surprising to me is that it's not a Western from Louis L'Amour.
Yeah, right. Everything else in here was Western.
That's also another reason why I'm
although, I think if a person who read a lot of Louis L'Amour read the book without knowing who wrote it could tell it was Louis L'Amour.
It's definitely him.
There were some very distinct tones similar to Comstock, I want to say.
And that's about the time when we started putting more books into the TARDIS, and we had two Louis L'Amour books put in there at the time. I mean, I didn't know he was picking that, but that was just the two ones that I wanted to put in there, and it just by chance we had two Louis L'Amour books.
Louis L'Amour, but I figured that'd be too much.
Well, it's okay, David helped.
It's a good thing I didn't put into.
So that's the reason why I picked it.
Mm-hmm. Salvage book.
No, it was definitely salvaged. Look what's left of it.
I love in the inside cover the map.
Yeah, the map.
Yeah.
I love those. A lot of his books
now.
Anyone
else
maps.
Warm now?
No, but I'm feeling good.
I didn't get the map. You should drink that and suddenly take a drink of soda. It just gets super cold.
Yeah.
And look at Wayne's trying to finish it. No. Oh, no, put dates in it.
Yeah, he figured he'd flavor the dates.
Yeah.
Why not? So come up.
I was going to help you out, Wayne, but not with the dates. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dave, tell us some of your likes.
Or synopsis first, right?
Synopsis.
Well,
we haven't done this in a while, guys.
I know, it's been a while.
It's a story about Matherin Kerbichard. And until Justin told me, I thought his last name was Kerbochard. But then again, that's from my lack of experience with foreign names.
And the audible version that I have, it almost sounds like it says Kerbershaw.
Yeah.
Kerbershaw? They don't pronounce the D.
Kerbershaw? Okay.
Kerbershaw.
Makes sense. And I guess I don't quite know where he was from. I'm thinking France.
Brittany is in the northeastern portion of France along the, the English Channel.
It was a war-torn country back then, and he was taken captive on a slave ship, and then he wanted to find out and rescue where he wanted to find out where his father was and rescue him, basically kind of family reunion kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a revenge plot at some points. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, I thought it was a very simple story.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I like the detail that he put into it. Sometimes him saying foreign names and telling you what it is in English was getting kind of redundant. But I enjoyed the history lesson and the foreign language study. But getting into, there's a lot of stuff that I liked about it, but then there's a lot of stuff I didn't like about it, because I honestly didn't even know what it was even going to be about. I was assuming that it was just going to be a lot older Western.
Right, because he's famous for Westerns.
Yeah. Yeah.
It kind of does follow that, you know.
Yeah, it reminds me more of the Three Musketeers. I don't know if you've read the books, but...
But, I read this book well over a year ago, and I just wrote notes on it and just left it in the book. I mean, I thought the descriptions of locations were excellent. I liked how I didn't even remember where Constantinople was. I'm like, where is that? Because it's not called Constantinople anymore. Mm-hmm.
Istanbul.
Yeah, Istanbul. And that was in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And then other names. There was one thing that I really liked about it was the diplomacy or war on page 390. What was that? I don't even remember.
Looking at ancient notes to figure out what's
going on. Okay, I got ancient notes here.
I digitized
them. Yeah, right here. I even highlighted
it. He highlighted the section.
I highlighted it.
Wow, he's prepared.
Yeah. Well, you read it. You saw my highlighted part. Countermeasures, whether in diplomacy or war, are never so good as direct measures. Attack, always attack, should be the policy of all men, all nations, when facing an enemy. Attack here, there, somewhere else. Always keep the enemy on the defensive and in a state of uncertainty as to where the next blow may fall. So I really like that part on the diplomacy of war. Kind of remind me of Sun Tzu a little bit.
I was going to say, yeah.
He
quotes him.
He quotes Sun Tzu.
Yeah, one of the spots I forget.
And I'd have to say that my favorite character was actually Mathurin. I mean, mm-hmm. It was basically all about him.
Mm-hmm.
But and then my favorite villain would have to be Muhammad. Is that how you pronounce his name? Who was his friend and then betrayed him because of Aziza?
I read it as Mahmoud.
Mahmoud.
Or at least the audible said something
like
that.
Yeah, the audible is Mahmoud.
I'm a student who drinks wine or whatever. Yeah.
Let me see. Yeah, it also reminded me of a Conan book with all the women.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Elf blood,
yeah.
I usually refer to that as the Archie power.
The Archie power. But I really enjoyed where he basically... Louis L'Amour gave you kind of like a history lesson on everywhere, and then the description, it kind of made me feel like I was with them.
He obviously did his research.
Oh, most definitely.
That was the biggest impression I took away from this book, was that maybe I'm incorrect, but I feel like Louis L'Amour had a natural knack for writing a Western, but I feel like for this one
he must have done a ton of research.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Back when Louis L'Amour was doing his thing, the amount of time he had to spend in a library looking up things like
facts and history.
Facts and his, because a lot of this stuff wasn't that, you know, available back then.
Yeah. Probably yeah, especially not. About
now
the
it's just
old
now
man of the mountain.
Now away.
Yeah, now you can Google anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know.
Heck, you don't even need to click the mouse. You say, hey, Google.
I'm a big fan of documentaries, and that's a, you know, because I'm an auditory learner. Right. So, but it's like, he's quoting things like, oh, I heard that in that documentary. Oh, I heard that in that documentary. Mm-hmm. Like, he gets a lot of stuff right.
But I like one of the creepy parts in there that I liked, but also I kind of like cringed, was when he found the secret passage to go down, down the stairs.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
loses the candle, and
yeah,
again,
you wind up holding your find yourself
and he can't breathe
your
because there's, you know, gas
then,
down
and
there.
And then there was no foothold underneath it afterwards. I'm like, oh shit, where's that go? You,
oh
you
my
can't
gosh.
Even tell.
That part I felt was so well written. I started to feel claustrophobic. Like,
So I was at work. School was out. I was grading papers. But it's artwork, so I don't have to, like, read. You know, I'm looking at and grading them.
Yeah, everything's an F. I get it.
No!
Another Butterfly Deborah thing.
There are 7th and 8th graders. I'm not going to give them all Fs.
A couple C minuses. Come on.
Yeah. D minuses.
No, so I'm, you know, I'm grading artwork, and I'm listening to that. And it's that scene. It's the middle of that scene. It's really intense. And Justin calls me, and my phone rings, and I jumped. And I answer, I'm like, just a second, let me stop the book. And I tell him what part of it. He's like, oh yeah. I'm like, yeah, I jumped when you called me.
Which part was
that scene where he's in the middle of that scene where he's trying to descend and he's lost his candle at that point and he's feeling around. So it's like really intense.
And then he picks up a skull.
Yeah. And then and Justin calls and I'm like, wah.
I had a similar story. I had just gone to the part with the candle and I forgot. I had my phone on, turned up, and one of my friends, her personalized text tone is Leslie Jordan, and he goes, well, shit, what are y'all doing? So, I'm reading, and just as the candle drops, I hear, well, shit! I jump, I go, yeah, you're right!
You're laughing. I have to listen to that quote all the time. All
I'm still laughing.
It was pretty... She has a knack of texting me, right? At those kinds of moments.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, sorry.
Did we actually say all our names yet?
Oh,
we didn't
God.
Do that. We were busy
we're
choking
drinking.
From trying to drink that.
Busy drinking.
Drink.
Alright, I'm Brandon.
I'm Justin.
I'm Bonnie. We're not saying last names.
I'm Wayne Abraham.
I'm David.
I'm Lewis.
I'm Aileen.
And we are the Bookies.
Wow.
That was our intro.
That was our intro.
That was really long. The really, really long scene before the beginning credits. There
yeah.
we go.
Yeah. So that was my likes about the book.
All right.
So I'll hand it over to Lewis.
So I haven't read very many Louis L'Amour books. I think this is the second one we've read for book club.
It
my
is.
Second one ever.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And given that I was expecting a Western and it really wasn't a Western, I did like it. I have some concerns we'll touch on later, but for the most part, it was a pretty easy read, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that they...
It was a zillion pages long.
It was quite long. They go to a lot of different places, but for the most part, the story was sort of easy to follow, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you look at this book and it's pretty thick, but you're not necessarily going to, like, you know, forget what Mathurin's goal is, you know?
Right.
He does diverge quite a bit from it over time, like off and on again, but it's always entertaining why he's doing the things he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
For a driven man, he doesn't seem to be all that driven.
Yeah.
No, he's easily distracted by a pretty face.
Yeah.
I'm going to avenge my father in like 4 or 5 months, probably, maybe. Oh,
that's
look,
right.
A mosque.
A 2 years later.
The most beautiful woman walked in the north.
Yeah, how many times can the most beautiful woman walk in?
About 6, 7
Oh my God.
He's
mm-hmm.
like the spirit. He's in love with whoever he's with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was. I thought it was entertaining. It wasn't difficult to read or anything. I do wish that it had been a bit more. Like some of the fat had been trimmed out.
Mm.
But for the most part, it did help to flesh out his character a bit more. I liked that there was... It was almost too big of a cast of characters, but I liked that it wasn't just him on his journey, like one man solo walking into the sunset kind of thing, you know? Like, it was...
It's not Clint Eastwood Man with No Name.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
All yeah. One-sided.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I liked it. I definitely thought it's worth a read.
Meaning?
Well, I thought there were certain scenes that I actually liked, that I would either get a good chuckle out of or just enjoyed. One of them being the scene with the honey. And
oh, yeah, that was good.
The hive, mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved the fact that he was like, oh, this guy is being a jerk and mm-hmm. taking all these, you know, basically taking the guy's money, mm-hmm. you know, from their pockets, basically. And he's like, okay, I'm going to get it. But he doesn't just straight out and be like, let's fight about it, you know. He's like, okay, I'm going to, you know, get in his head a little bit and then, you know, take care mm-hmm. of it. So I liked that scene. So for me, a lot of my enjoyment of the book were just little scenes like that, you know.
Seems that actually weren't necessary, to be honest.
Right. They really yeah. weren't necessary and to the overall plot.
They spoke to the character of our main
protagonist. Yeah, it's like while he's protagonist. Doing, you know, his ultimate goal, he does take a little bit of time here and there to, okay, let me take care of this quick, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah.
No, I'd like to add something for that, but I'm wondering if the way they treated Mathrin in the foreign countries was correct, though, because they generally tend to look at outsiders back then as like I don't want to say contempt.
It depends on the area, because yeah. some yeah. areas were like Greece was always open for trade.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, but, you know, it depends
yeah,
on the
but he also area. Kept having to prove himself before they were really like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm wondering, though, if the cultures, because I think most people probably wouldn't like somebody else because they know that you're not going to adapt to their culture.
But he made a point of doing that kind
yeah, of adapting, but I'm wondering mm-hmm. if that's really true, if you're willing to adapt to their culture, if they would actually help you like they did in the book.
Yes, sometimes.
Probably. That's what I'm wondering.
He definitely followed the course of when in Rome, mm-hmm. do as the Romans.
Except when he didn't, because like in my land, I don't stand for kings.
Yes.
You know.
Oh, you're a priest talking to these other soldiers? The guy you like, he's wrong.
Right? Which also could be very true, because I think if I went, yeah, of course I would try to adapt to other cultures, but there's still a lot of my own upbringing I would take with me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Things that I might not think are okay might be okay in other places, but I'm like, no, I'm sorry, I can't go that far, you know, whatever. So
see, some of that I interpreted as him just kind of growing as a person and becoming more confident, because when we first meet him, he's not really very sure of himself, and then he instantly becomes an ore slave, you know, like he's
yeah, but he keeps saying like, well, if I'd known, you know, but I didn't know, and you need to learn, you know, so at least he's humming on the fact that he's learning, or needed to, at that point he needed to learn this, and he hadn't learned it yet, you know.
Yeah, and so like by the scene with the priest, for instance, that's like two-thirds of the way through the book, probably, maybe
that.
More than that.
Yeah,
and so at that point, he's definitely pretty sure of who he is as a person, and like, he's kind of like a fuckboy, but like an enjoyable one, you know? Because he's just so confident in what he's done at this point, you know?
Almost dangerously so.
Almost
like,
dangerously
where you're like,
so.
Okay, you're going to get killed.
Well, the way he flirts with some of the girls is like,
And especially in foreign countries like that, mm-hmm. he'll kill you for that.
Yeah, but
well, that becomes a problem in some of those stories,
But at that point, he's mentioned that, like, he is not really afraid of death at that point, because he's known death for quite a while now, because of having almost died like 7 times probably.
Oh, yeah. He says it a couple times in the book, so I'm going to say what I want to say because I have a fast horse.
Yeah.
And he's still astride that horse, so. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, another scene that I liked was, well, not so much a scene, but I like how towards the beginning of the book he ends up tricking the people who, you know, enslaved him, and
he sells
the boat with
that
him.
Was funny.
And you know, like he waits till he gets just so drunk, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna sell the boat to this guy." And oh, I'm gonna act like this, and you know, he gets some local to help him. And I found
that was my favorite character,
the beggar.
That was my favorite scene.
Yeah.
Sidal or something. Anyway, I don't remember his name, but that was my favorite.
Khatib.
He picked the right guy. That whole scene where he's in the... He goes... Because he knows who has the money and who's just so... Yeah,
Shira Lee, that's it.
Yeah, Shira Lee. And so he goes, you know, and he's... This big deal! Oh, my nephew! And blah, 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 right in front of the... Well, the guy did voices, okay? I listened to Audible.
Oh, really?
He had really good voices.
That didn't come from nowhere.
No, that came from the Audible, you know, and he's... And, nephew, this is a... Oh, it's a sin to sell it now. It's a bad... You know... He makes this big deal and he gets the guy all hooked. Like, oh, it was so good. He really knew who to hit, who to pick. And he picked spot on the right guy. Former merchant to begin with. You know, oh, it was great. That was my favorite.
Admittedly, at first.
He was fantastic. And I was like, yes, the charlatan's amazing.
I'll say, at first, I wasn't sure if we could trust him because we just met him. Like, I don't know if I would have trusted this guy to try to help me. But then, like you said, he did such a great job of, oh, not the boat, you know, kind of thing.
Oh, we can't sell the boat. Yeah,
no, but we can go up to such and such and get a better price.
Yeah.
We can sell in Cadiz.
Right?
So, yeah, I liked him also, and I liked that.
You and Walter comes back and they get him knocked out and chained up and whatever, you know.
Yeah.
The slaves come with the boat.
Yep. Watch out for that one. He's trouble.
He'll tell you all kinds of things.
Terrible liar. Uh-huh.
So,
it was so well done. That was my absolute favorite part, I think.
Yeah.
There were other really good parts, but that one made me laugh and smile the most. That one, I loved it. Loved it.
So, I think it was right about that time when I realized, oh, this guy's got brains. Like, he's going to be smart about things, right? Mm-hmm. Unless he's running headlong into sword fights. But,
yeah.
But, yeah, so those are just some of my favorite parts. So.
Fleeing for his life, yeah.
That's actually my favorite scene, too, was the boat selling. It was like...
So good.
So good. It was a great revenge. It was, you know, like, I've been slave, we freed the slaves, and we're going to sell the boat. Everyone splits out with money. We all get to disappear. Like, it was a perfect scam that just shows up, like, really early on in the book.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was...
like, the first quarter of the book somewhere.
Yeah. The other thing was Louis L'Amour definitely had some of the same sword fighting manuals that I have.
Some of those fights were really good.
Because the way he describes the blade movement and stuff, like, oh, I know where he got that from. There's a 14th century Capoeira manual that I was like, that's where he got that from. You know.
No, the scene with his fight with the Count de Tournemine. Mm-hmm. That was a good fight.
Yeah. You know,
that wasn't the only good fight, but that one kind
of... When he talks about dropping to his knee and the blade going through his throat, into the back of the skull.
Or when he tosses the blade in the air, catches it, and throws it like a javelin.
Mm-hmm. That's more, you know, fun fantasy stuff.
Yeah, that's more Hercules and Cena.
No, it was still fun.
Yeah, but, like, a lot of the technique that he talks, especially when, like, a pike's pointing at his belly, he's like, I'm going to slap this away with my hand and move in here. Like, all that is, like...
Straight up
historical combat. Mm-hmm. You know, I was caught off guard about, like, how... Because not a lot of writers go that...
Right.
...level.
Right.
You know, I just happen to be an expert in this field. But a lot of art writers just, you know... It's an easy thing to fake.
Sure it is.
But for him to, like, I knew exactly what source material he was pulling from. I'm like, wow, okay. You know, I was really impressed with the combat.
And in his other books, he's had a lot of experience describing the fight in a realistic manner. Because he was a
boxer.
He was a boxer himself when he was a younger man, so he knew and he appreciated the art of combat, so to speak. I think so. He took great pains to try to describe it properly.
Yeah, like, not a lot of people have experience talking about pike combat.
Yeah.
It's like okay, yeah, that's a guy who's read some stuff. So I really appreciated that. I appreciated again just how clever the character was. There are these moments where it's like, almost, like, I can kill you, but it's going to be a lot easier and better for me to just outsmart you. you know, like he's
when he learned, because at first he didn't know that, but he learned along the way that the mind can be an even better weapon than the sword.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, that was part of the whole motivation for selling the boat to begin with, because right. he wanted to like really make Walther like feel like
everything he felt.
Like, yeah, like shamed and like he had been bettered rather than just that he's dead.
I'm gonna take away your source of income.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, you're a pirate. I'm going to take away your livelihood.
Yeah.
And made him a slave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wasn't even a good pirate either.
No.
Couldn't even leave the side of land.
Right.
There's a lot of pirates who, in the early days, couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Because they'd get far out and they didn't know how to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I think that's a lot of my positives. Justin?
I like you, I appreciated the combat, and one of my favorite characters was definitely Khatib.
He
was a reoccurring guy by chance in there, and was turned out to be a loyal friend and servant to the Mathrin.
What did they call him? I mean, he called him. What was that? It was kind of like a...
They would insult each other back and forth, and it was kind of like the banter between them sometimes.
It was just, friendly, insulting jokes.
Yeah, you know, call it, you know, the mangy cur dog, and I forget,
didn't he call him an infidel, too?
Infidel.
Infidel.
Because they're all Muslim.
Yeah,
it'd be kind of weird because I mean I'm assuming back then he would have been Catholic maybe.
No, he's pagan.
He was pagan.
He was a druid.
Yeah, that's right.
A druid.
Yeah.
One of the last. Still,
I mean, just think though, if you went there with what you learned and then go into a Muslim state, how weird it would be. I think that it would be a super culture shock.
But also, though, he had some encounters with other cultures because the servants at his home, one of them was Muslim, and so he had some contact with that. It would have been even worse if he would have been just a European guy.
He probably wouldn't have known how to read.
He wouldn't have known how to read or anything like that, and you know.
Well, they get into culture shock or culture difference quite a bit. Like one of the things that I loved was they mentioned the bathing differences.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Which was quite true.
It was very true.
I love when he goes back to his area and he's more cultured shock there because there's no bathing and all that. Oh, gosh.
Well, one of the reasons why they didn't get into it, but one of the reasons why, especially in the British Isles in that area, bathing was a bad idea. Was it was so cold, you'd take a bath, and then you'd get hypothermia and you'd die.
Yeah.
Like, bathing could actually kill you.
Yeah. They had laws against bathing in certain times of the year.
Mm-hmm.
If you bathe your children, they would throw you in jail.
It was child abuse.
But, you know, they would use feces on their fields.
So do the Chinese.
Well, hell, we do that now, but it's
night soil. Yeah, night soils have been a long thing for gardening.
Yeah.
Wayne was the one who told me the old the British the Irish tribes would bathe a little bit more back then because they were upstream, and they would go down to like courting for a woman, and the women would like put off and like because they couldn't smell. You know, the,
right.
the give me a man I can smell.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no.
After this, remind me to tell you a story my mom just told me about poop. Sorry.
Nice.
Poop? Yeah.
poop.
Mm-hmm. Bonnie.
Well, we were talking about, Justin brought it up. We were, at one point, I'm going, this guy is so full of himself. Oh, and Justin's like, oh yeah, he gives D'Artagnan a run for his money. If you've read the books, of the Three Musketeers, D'Artagnan is a pompous ass who gets himself into so much trouble because he's a cocky guy.
Yeah.
And
but can he back it up?
Well, I mean, he did.
Yeah.
Kirby Shaw here. Kirby, he was.
He's just as bad, if not.
Three duels in one day.
Three duels in one day.
Yeah. So that's why I was saying it reminds us a bit of the Three Musketeers, especially the books.
I was always a Porthos fan.
I have a couple quotes that I like. And it was audible, so I don't have page numbers. I just have chapter numbers.
I only have a couple.
Yeah, I'm going to show the chapter. So in chapter 10, only the ignorant can become fanatics. He's talking about, you know, the more learned you are, the more you're like, no, you see that. He was talking about how much more he learned and he realized there was so much more he needed to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about, you know, how only the ignorant can become fanatics.
That's a real thing,
They're the only ones who are going to believe all this nonsense, because if you really learn and you really pay attention, you know, I'm like, oh, that's a good quote. Only the ignorant can become fanatics.
But he's always referring to himself and his level of knowledge as a kind of ignorance.
Right.
What does that mean? Democrats are...
You are not going to go... we're not going to make anything either way. I'm not... I'm saying a quote from the book. Let's leave it at that. Chapter 17. The truth is for those who lack imagination. When he was, you know, he's twisting a tale and telling a lie. He's like, the truth is for those who lack imagination. Reminds me of my favorite line from A Knight's Tale. I'm a writer. I give the truth scope. You know, always embellishing things. I think it's great. And then
call the lance. Hello.
Yeah. Chapter 29. In many languages, the word for stranger and the word for enemy are the same, which is, you know. Anyway, those were a couple of three of my favorite quotes in there so far. I didn't write down everything,
mm-hmm.
but I wrote down those three. So, but yeah, you already know who my favorite character was. I liked our main guy, and you know, just sometimes I got irritated with him. I'm like, yeah, right. Every now and then, oh, of course. Oh, great. If you just ignored the pretty eyelashes, you'd be on your way. You'd be safe.
They're so long, Bonnie.
I know.
The eyelashes are so long.
So long, and he went on about.
And she looked at me.
She looked at me.
The like, orange garden at noon.
Right?
I'm going to spend days waiting for this bitch to show up.
He's talked about how he's not a poet.
Later.
He's not a poet. But for Fat Claire, he had it in his heart to give her poetry. And so he's about to say something, and then he knew he needed to leave. He should have left 5 minutes sooner. Whatever. Idiot. So yeah. Sometimes every now and again, I'm just like, dummy. But yeah. But I
remember even thinking of that part, like, she looked at him, I'm like, she probably looked at a lot of people just passing her gaze.
Right?
Doesn't mean she looked right at you.
Those two argue, no, she looked at me. No, she looked at me. Mm-hmm. And it became a big issue later. Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Obviously, it worked.
It did work.
And it's like, oh, you'll fall in love again in 5 more chapters. Just right? Hold your horses. Yep.
It's not even 5. Give him a chapter and a half. He'll be good. Oh, my gosh. All right. Go ahead, Papa.
Well, it was a simple case. Boy meets girl. They fall in love. Boy upsets officials, local officials, gets arrested, scheduled for execution, escapes. Meets new girl, falls in love,
goes to
gets arrested,
rinse repeat,
escapes. Yeah.
Yeah.
The classic tale.
Repeating over and over and over. But there were some really good parts, yeah.
Yes, there were.
Although none of my favorite parts involved the girls. Just saying. Not the romance.
One
blade going in the back of someone's skull, that's where you're at.
No, I was like the funny stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The honey and the you know, selling of the boat with I love that guy. Anyway.
One of the scenes that I liked was when the big caravan was traveling and they were passing the area that belonged to the nomads.
That sucks, they got all killed.
And he goes into the camp to, basically, because Prince Yuri was there and had the ear of the Khan. And he went in to take him out because he perceived him as a threat. And he's also there to buy time so the caravan can move on its way and hopefully get out of range. And it turns out that the Khan's son.
Was one of his ore mates.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. From back when. And he's like, tosses him a wineskin at one point, goes, I owe you a drink. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But he's there. He calls Yuri out to one-on-one combat, kills him, and the Khan is grateful that he helped release his son from the galley, and they sit down and just have this amiable discussion, and then the Khan brings him his horse and gear and said, go warn your friends, we attack at dawn.
Basically, give them a head start.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems kind of funny because nowadays, if you help somebody, like if they were, I'm not saying like a slave ship, like if you help them in an accident, they'd be like friends for life.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And he goes, you know, and he makes his trail confusing and lets the people know, and they work at making their trail confusing. So they get to the beach where the ships are supposed to pick them up, and it takes the horse nomads like 3 days or something to finally catch up with them and figure out where they are. You know, and they still end up massacring almost the entire lot. The girl escapes. And obviously Khatib, because he shows up later.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Mathrin is injured. He's hiding in this rubble. He's fading in and out. And he hears this voice, you owe me two drinks. As the Khan's son drops a water skin next to him and goes on his way as if he didn't know he was there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just really liked the interactions.
Right.
With him and the Khan and the Khan's son. You know, even though his side lost the battle. And then later on, I think, was it when he was in Constantinople? Or I don't remember which place it was, but it was after he had left Paris that he mentions them, the Khan and his son, and like, did they send a message on his behalf or something?
Yeah, if I remember right, they did.
Yeah. And that was just an interesting relationship. We can be on opposite sides, but we can treat each other with respect.
Well, you already knew the battle was over, so there's no need to get personal about it.
Mm-hmm. You know,
like, this isn't like, about vengeance.
Like, but the prince chose me as his enemy. He's not my enemy unless he makes the wrong choice.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know. Baron de Tournemine was
definitely his enemy.
Definitely his enemy, and
he got
and it. Took down the table.
Yes.
That, oh God, I forgot about that. That was one of the funny parts that I loved about this book.
That table better be up there every time we come back.
Mm-hmm.
You took down the table.
Yeah, and
he turns white.
It was
like,
clear that he had just forgotten about that at this point, you know.
But the fact when he says that and he turns white as a sheet, it's like,
oops,
I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And he was.
I just remembered another scene. It took place after the battle with the nomads where his horse found him.
Yeah.
And then the...
Yeah, the crazy old man.
The crazy old man who tries to enslave him. That was an interesting.
You're my slave now.
That was an interesting.
I will beat you. Like, if I didn't have a broken foot right now, I'd be up your ass. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
But it was just his love of books. and being able to fall into in with the scholars and the scribes and just fit in and gain access to more books and learns to translate books.
Having an eidetic memory helps.
Yeah.
Right. Because he had that along with everything else.
Yeah. Being able
and
to...
And all those mounted the oars and my muscles were big and I was starting...
And he had all the eyelashes of all the
girls. Right? He was nice to know that she smiled at me in spite of my clothing because
I was wondering
I'm hot guy.
If Louis L'Amour wanted to have this be his Conan.
His 007.
Or whatever.
Whatever. The guy who gets all the girls. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I also enjoyed the food descriptions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's some fun stuff. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't have money.
The meals and things, yeah.
What do you think I got the... I'm thinking it's pronounced Rocky. Because I asked Victor over at the liquor warehouse because he's from the Middle East somewhere. I'm thinking he's from Serbia. Mm-hmm. And I go, yes, as soon as I go, do you have any... And I kind of try to pronounce how I heard it on Google. And she pronounced it kind of like Rocky. Mm. And he's like, aisle 2, right-hand side.
That place is amazing.
It is. Yes.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I walk in like, you got any meat? Like, aisle 4, right-hand side.
Got some today. Yeah,
they know their liquor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that guy does.
To get a place like that in Hemet, it's like, right? You know,
that's
where,
the thing. Yeah, it's
where
like,
I'm
it's
going to like get
Bevmo
meat.
Better than, yeah. Better than Bevmo. Better than
just do not talk politics with Victor.
I don't talk, you know.
I'm making a point not to talk politics with anybody, to be honest.
No, because I asked him, why is some of this hard to get? Because I took a picture of the ginger wine, the Stone's ginger wine. I've been looking for that for quite some time. And I go, how come we can't get that? And he went into politics and every other word were F-bombs coming out of him. And I'm like, okay. Wow, don't you own this store? There's walking by.
There is a, because of the distribution problems, yeah. I've heard other places having a hard time getting rare liquors and stuff.
Yeah. Well, all right, dislikes. Or did you have more? Sorry.
I'm good. I did enjoy some of the scenes at the Assassin's Guild where he's read this information in a book and doesn't do it and has heard descriptions and doesn't know exactly what it is, but he mixes up black powder.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And they are able to escape because of it. But
boom.
Go ahead.
Big bada boom.
So we... Okay.
Real quick, I got one more positive thing that I forgot to mention. Early on, he makes a big to-do about the coffee houses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was real.
Yep.
That I just recently read an article about how that's the beginning of the Enlightened Age.
Yes.
Because coffee houses were a place for... people to start gathering and talking ideas, and like the coffee houses were the beginning of the Enlightened Age.
Yeah. So the medieval Starbucks.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Ye old Starbucks.
Yeah. Ye old Starbucks.
Yeah, people would sit in there on ye old laptops writing ye old scripts.
Not laptops. Stone tablets.
Stone tablets. Yeah. That's right.
The historical fact for you.
Lapstones.
Literal tablets. Right.
Yeah. Literal tablets.
All right. David, did you want to pick up with the qualms, the quarries, the issues?
I'd say my big one is that the story was long and then it just ended. It ended real quick.
After all of that.
Yeah, after all of that, it was really long, and then it ended super quick. Like,
it was pretty abrupt.
Yeah, like, he either got bored with the story and wanted to end it.
I got a timetable to meet.
Timetable.
It's a deadline. Publisher wants the book.
Yeah.
Plus, after 400 pages, you'd be done, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought, that kind of blew. I wanted to, if you're going to make it a full long story, just make it a full long story.
So I had a problem with the ending, too.
Yeah, I was a little bit disappointed with that. The descriptions and locations were excellent, but I hate having to pronounce a word that I can't pronounce. It's highly annoying because I just have to pronounce it the way I think and then just mentally say, okay, that's what it is, and then go on with it. One thing that I really cringed at was when he escaped from the cell and was climbing down the wall.
Oh, I figured no breaks off.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
For real. Because
I hate heights.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That was just as bad as the claustrophobia of the castle depths. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who helped you?
There was a pretty girl at the end.
Yeah, I was on that wall by myself.
No one helped me.
But I wouldn't have climbed down that wall, I probably would have just died. I would have gotten executed. I'm not climbing down that.
The end.
Basically, yeah, the end. Because I don't like heights at all. And one thing that I thought, it was very true, but it's very sad that opinions at the time could get you in trouble with the churches.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very true.
Like the point of arrest and execution.
Yeah. If some member of the church didn't like what you said, I'm going to go tell on you.
Or there's plenty of stories where they made stuff up to eliminate a rival or.
Look at the Spanish Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
And no one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
The reign of terror in France.
Mm-hmm. And the witch trials. All that.
Yeah. Well, to an extent that, not with the church necessarily, but that still happens today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if, for instance, a modern example is if you say something or write something or make known a negative opinion about the king or the royal family of Thailand, they can, if you ever go there as like an American citizen or whatever, they can literally throw you in jail. Like, they have you could call them anti-libel laws, but basically if you're ever insulting to the royal family, even as a non-Thai citizen, they can and will throw you in jail.
Oh, interesting wow. fact.
Yeah.
For years.
Yeah. It's happened to journalists and people who just put stuff on Facebook. Like,
wow.
So if I say something really cool and then I go to Thailand, are they going to reward me?
You hope so.
They will reward you with not putting you in jail.
Yay!
Dave's comments do not reflect that.
The book he's writing it.
So stuff like that can still happen today.
Yeah.
And it's just as messed up now.
But other than that, I didn't really have any very many dislikes with the book. Maybe just my major qualm was probably the pronunciation of words that I couldn't pronounce, but I don't blame the book. I blame myself on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really have a whole lot of really big gripes with this book. It's mostly just little things like,
right.
I can and do respect that Louis L'Amour did a ton of historical research before writing this book, but I feel like he should have trimmed a lot of that out of the book, because so often when like the main character goes to a new place, we end up getting like 4 or 5 paragraphs about a short history lesson of everyone that's ever been to this place and conquered it and then relinquished it and like,
right.
Mm-hmm. I kind of got
like,
lost.
It's not
in those
that
parts.
It wasn't interesting.
He was thorough.
But just because you did all the research doesn't mean we need to hear
that's
all
what
the research.
Yeah. It can inform the narrative without being a history lesson in the book.
It almost felt like I learned this, now you shall too.
Right? Yeah. Yes. And it was unnecessary. There were some things that were really interesting.
Yeah.
But we didn't need all of it. We really didn't.
Yeah, because I'm figuring like you said, Lewis, if you would have trimmed that out,
book would have been half as long.
Yeah, it's at least chapters.
And I think the ending wouldn't have been hurried.
Would have more time for the character.
Because, I mean, I thought the ending was okay, but like I said, it was a little bit hurried. And if the fat was trimmed out of the book, he would have made it.
It could be
better
somewhere else.
It could have been better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was my main thing with the book.
I would agree with that.
I could even kind of enjoy that it was sort of a meandering narrative. It was very, I guess you could call it like the Odyssey in that way, you know?
Mm, very much.
Like, he goes from this place to this place to this place to this place. Yeah. But I would have wanted him to at least be a little bit more focused on trying to find his dad. Because at some points he ended up spending like 5 or 6 months just in one location. Mm-hmm. After hearing that maybe his dad's dead. I would have wanted to see towards
the
that.
The story covers, what, 10 years of time almost?
Something like that. Like it's
more than that.
More than that. But 15? at least 10
I'd say
years.
About 25.
Oh. 25, maybe?
Because when we first meet him, he's like a young person.
Yeah, he's like 12. 16, I thought.
16. He's young.
Definitely a young man.
I don't think he's 25 years. I think maybe in the end he was 25 years old.
Oh, maybe.
But yeah, I just for that being his driving thing, he didn't focus on it a whole lot.
He wasn't a very driven character for this being his his sole focus.
He was more driven to find and read books than to find and save his father.
He's an eagle.
And looking at girlies with long
eyelashes. I smell his ears. I kind of find
him. You ever seen eyelashes?
Starting to get
like
a little discouraged.
Well, the difference in that is Inigo Montoya was very driven. He's like, yeah, maybe I'll go get my... Like, even to the point where when he rescues his... Well, I'll get to that later.
Later.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just saying. So he's an Inigo. You know, your whole life's in Bay Storm Vince. Yeah, you know, he's like, spent all his time. And then I'm starting to get a little discouraged. You know, I can't find the guy. So there's a little bit of that. You know, I just work for Vizzini to pay the bills.
So yeah, that was my main thing. Like... A meandering main character is good for an adventure story, but not if your goal is to quickly save your father. And then 10 years later, oh shit, my dad's still in jail.
Maybe I should go save him
now. No, I'm not going to say that. Never mind.
Well, my only two complaints to the book was one was what you were saying. I feel like this was side quest the book.
Oh my god, yes.
Like, if... In D&D terms,
it's
like,
me playing a video game and doing all the side quests.
Like, he has this. Okay, I need to save my dad. Like you guys are saying, okay, but let's spend some time over here. You know, like even though I love the scene with the honey and the bees and everything, that really wasn't exactly helping his plot. No. Further, like you know,
no,
like,
but it was a lot of fun.
It was
so
a lot of
him
fun.
Do that one.
Don't get me wrong, but there was a lot of that going on, and a lot of you, like.
I didn't
okay.
mind the discussion about the world being round or flat either. That was fun.
That was good. Yeah,
but like a lot of his stuff, I just felt was because once he found out, oh my dad, he's not dead, he's alive.
He's a slave.
Then I would expect him to be like, okay, let's focus, let's go. You know, every adventure between now and then is going to be solely focused. I'm getting to my dad.
But he hasn't collected all of the gems from this area.
Right?
So he can't go save Zelda. I mean, his dad yet.
So, you know, it kind of, like you guys are saying, it just felt a little unfocused.
Side quest the book. Yeah. I love that. That's the subtitle of this book. Right? The Walking Drum. Side quest the book.
At some points, you can kind of see it making sense. Like, I gotta save my dad. In order to do that, I gotta get off the slave ship. In order to do that, I gotta get rid of the main guy.
Certain things are... Yeah. But
other times, no.
And you're like... Well, and for a while... Go ahead.
I was gonna say, early on it makes sense because he doesn't know if his dad's dead or alive. So he's like, well, maybe I'll just become a scholar. Maybe I'll... You know, and then...
And I can learn stuff as I go,
Later on, he finds out his dad's still alive. It's like... From that moment on, it should have been go time.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a while, I couldn't figure out what bugged me on this book, because it wasn't like it's a bad book. But once I realized, oh, it's because of all this other stuff he's doing, that's what's bugging me, is the fact that he's doing everything else, finding all the gems, Bonnie, and then heading towards...
It's not at all what you would have done.
And look how long it took for you to figure out what the walking drum was.
Oh, my God! Oh.
That was one of my...
That was okay. Never mind.
My thing.
And then the second thing, and it's going to kind of lead into what Brent's going to talk, because I know what one of his problems is the ending. It's like, oh, I saved my dad. Okay, bye, dad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we saved him. And
they spend 2 weeks together, and then they're gone.
And then they're gone. And it's like,
and they do a Roman handshake, and that's it. Not even like a bro.
Not even like a hug.
The
Roman handshake, and they go in separate directions.
It's like, see you later, Dad. Yeah. I'm going to India.
Don't get caught again.
Right.
I guess.
And it's like,
I'll save you in 20 years.
Okay, so you spent in my book, almost, like over 500 pages. Oh, my dad's alive. Let's go find my dad. Okay, well, nice seeing you again, Dad. I'm glad you're not dead. You know? Thank you for not dying.
I saved you, but I got Aziza to save now.
Right? Oh, so it seemed like very, like you were saying, abrupt. It's just like, okay, he's going to go his way, I'm going to go my way, and we're done. You know,
I'd be like, Dad, let's go to India.
Yeah. Adventure together.
The book should have had them both riding off into the sunset together.
A Western writer should know this.
Yes.
Yeah, because then it's like more or less lone wolf and cub, but inverted, you know, and then they can go together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But like, the dad wanted adventures with his son.
Yeah.
He even says, like, when this is done, we'll then... And his son's like, already took care of that.
Yeah, instead it was Cisco.
So go home, Dad. Go home and die.
All the son wanted was to save his dad, not to be with his dad.
Yeah. Like, that bothered me. That really bothered me.
Like, almost like he was only saving his dad because, you know, for the honor of saving my dad, not because I actually hope he's alive, you know? Yeah. Okay, go ahead,
sorry. No, you're like, there's a lot of like, you trained me well, Dad, and all this. And then at the very
end. I learned all this other stuff on the way, so it really wasn't about you anymore.
Yeah, like,
it just. All about me.
It really bothered me that it ends with them going off into two separate directions. Like, I get that he had the idea of maybe doing another one, but still.
Yeah.
It should have, same direction, same, you know, father and son reunited at last.
It's like a soft cliffhanger, kind of.
Yeah.
You know? It's unsatisfying like that.
Like, even if they didn't spend the rest of the years
fighting together.
Cliffhanger
endings of chapters were better than that. Every dang chapter, practically, too. So annoying.
I would say, like, even if eventually they went their own way, like, okay, let's at least have one adventure together, and then you go your way, I'll go my way, kind of thing, you know?
One of my other... Take the low road. I'll be in Scotland before... sorry, Bonnie started. I had to finish.
You're welcome.
Shave and haircut.
So
that's gonna be great on the mic, by the way.
Sorry, y'all.
My other problem is, I think it was when he's in Paris, and it's this climactic moment. He's surrounded by five different pikemen on all angles, and I can parry this, but if I take one of them out, one of them's gonna get me. It's a no-win situation, and a rope falls from the ceiling. He's like, and he can climb up the rope. We were introduced to his acrobatic friends literally two paragraphs ago. An editor would have said, no, you need to set this up earlier.
Yeah.
You need to introduce them earlier. You need to explain why the fuck they're on a roof with a rope. like, why was his buddies just hanging up there? Like, there's no explanation for that.
It's a deus ex machina.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it drove me crazy.
Out of all the time he took to explain the history of places,
he hurried up with that.
Right?
Yeah. Like, this was a plot point in your story that you... These characters were told about. One has a... it works for his son's sick, and we're given all this backstory. Not once do they actually have any lines in the book. You know, they're not given any dialogue. They're.
I need to get him out of his trouble. I just got him in. Let me write a couple paragraphs, insert them right before this scene, and there we go.
But the acrobatic troupe.
He had talked about
had been introduced several chapters before
this is
in
true.
The other town because he.
But not the people themselves
them.
Specifically. Just keep that he did
that. That he worked with them and practiced with
right.
them. So it's.
So he should have added it then. The details should have been added.
That's what I'm
then.
Saying. Yeah, yeah.
Like
a good editor.
Remember those acrobats that I introduced you to a while ago that I didn't pay any attention to? Yeah.
Well, this is a little bit more about them, and they're about to save me. There we go.
Like, that really bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
The ending really bothered me. There's a lot of, like, I don't want to say plot holes, but there's a lot of stuff that you could have focused more time on versus...
Less on history lessons.
Less on history.
Oh, sorry.
No. But yeah, like, I'm trying to think of everything because the rope thing really bothered me. That stuck out.
Yeah.
Because, again, okay, I can believe that your buddies are going to go out there and help you. But if they don't know because you ran off by yourself, what were they doing on the roof?
Yeah. What? That particular roof at that particular time with a rope
with a
to
rope.
Help you.
Yeah. You know.
They were watching the combat arena.
So, all right, that was.
They paid for top tier tickets.
Oh, they didn't pay. I was glad they're on the roof.
Yeah, so I guess that's probably my big gripes.
For me, besides all the stuff that was already mentioned, you get a little more than halfway through the book before the walking drum is even mentioned. Mm-hmm. But the book is called The Walking Drum. Mm-hmm. And then it's only there for, what, 3 chapters?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Before and then, everyone gets killed?
Before, yeah, and then... And I'm like, I feel like the book should have been called something else.
Like Side Quest the Book?
The Adventure...
Side Quest the Book, yes.
The Adventures of Maturin Kirbyshaw or whatever.
Yeah. Or To Save a Father.
Or To Save a Father, or...
And even that wouldn't be it, because the saving of the father's at the end of the story.
Know, and
my side quests.
You know, on my journey to revenge.
You know, that was my biggest gripe, of the title of the book.
I have to save my, ooh, shiny.
Oh, yeah. Squirrel, where?
Squirrel, yeah, exactly. No, not squirrel. Girl, where? Girl. Gold, oh, right.
What was I talking about? My dad? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, dad, right, dad. Ooh, pretty eyelashes.
Another book.
Just keep right? Yeah, another book.
I think I'd be looking at eyelashes as well.
Yeah. It's such an odyssey, and there's so much. I felt like it could have been multiple books.
Mm-hmm.
Please, we could have had a little trilogy going on here.
Purely on length alone, yeah.
Yeah, so that's one thing. Agreeing with pretty much everything else that's all been said, but yeah, I felt like it could have been broken up. Like, if it was written today, it would the publishers would have insisted on breaking it up.
And then making a movie out of it.
Yeah.
And then changing the ending. We're expanding it a little bit.
But with something that I actually, it happens a lot, and I've noticed in the young adult books of today, every single chapter is a cliffhanger. Mm. It's always action, and not any downtime. Now, there was downtime in here, and it wasn't every chapter, but oh my gosh, it was every other chapter. Was a cliffhanger, like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to? I have the book. I'm going to read more. Do you have to? Do a cliffhanger?
It's like, I have work to do, darn it.
In walks a guy with a sword, end chapter.
And I knew it was coming, always. Like, there'd be a phrase, and I'm like, oh, that's going to be the end of the, yep, chapter, you know, and then say the next chapter. I'm like, yep, I knew, next chapter, because this is how he writes it. Why? So annoying. So there was, you know, there was repetitiveness in this odyssey of things, and which was not necessarily a bad thing, but sometimes it just got a little, like, I would just be like, ah. Oh, again, really, you know, like mm-hmm.
almost kind of like it was being released chapter by chapter in a pulp, like but until it, next time.
Right, but
you know?
It wasn't. I don't know. Yeah, but you know,
it felt that way.
Yeah.
Really.
A lot of his earlier stories were,
but I don't think this one was. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. No. But anyway,
it has that feeling of tune in next time for the adventures.
Yeah, yeah, see,
the walking drum or whatever.
Yeah, will he escape? Will he? Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Will he save the girl? Will he definitely read another book? Yes, it yes. Oh, goodness, yes, he will.
Next time they switch it up, he translates a book.
Yeah, yes, he needs to translate it, yes. But he does that. I mean, and that's another. He
and then
was
reads
like,
it to somebody in
his, and I get it. He did travel, and he can learn a lot of things. But, oh, my goodness, he just knew everything. Like, okay, yes, okay, he learned that, and now he got to apply it. But.
Of course, they
well,
did.
Just a little unbelievable.
They did explain that in the beginning because of his druid training.
I understand that. They brought that multiple times.
Even that's
I get it.
Well, on that note, the thing that struck out at me is like wholly unbelievable is when he starts, like basically scribing out books, like from rote memorization, entire books that he had translated like 2 or 3 years ago at that point.
And he's writing them down. Yeah.
Like, here, I'm going to make another copy of this book that I read 5 years ago, just completely, totally written out from memory. Like,
right.
How?
My grandfather was like that.
Well, I wish I could be.
My grandfather, one of his favorite stories was Omar Khayyam. Mm-hmm. And he had all 4 translations memorized.
Oh my God.
And he could tell you which one you're getting wrong.
Was he also a sword fighter and a master pirate and a sailor?
Well,
from some of the stories I've heard.
If he didn't actually do it, he read it in a book and then taught it to his grandsons. So, because he did do that. So.
Oh, and an alchemist.
Right, right. Yeah. Although the whole we're gonna make gold was funny, like chicken in the green air. I like that. That would be my second favorite scene. My first being, oh nephew, we can't sell this ball right now. That guy. Yeah. Okay. Things we didn't like. I think I covered it. Okay. Things you didn't like.
You have the Valley of the Assassins. Amulet or something like that. And you find out his dad is there. And they make a point. Yeah, Alamat. They make a point of letting you know how impossible it is to get in.
Right.
Because the old man of the mountain, who's head of the assassins, you know, nobody gets in without his permission. And once you get in, nobody leaves. And they're very, very clear on those points. Through half the book, or maybe slightly less.
Mm-hmm. Like the second half.
Yeah. And
once he finds out.
Yet, I have to go there. I have to save my father.
Eventually.
He gets there. He does this posing as Ibn Ibrahim, a Muslim physician and scholar, and adopts that because he knows that the old man of the mountain will be intrigued and invite him there. And that does happen. So, when that happens, you've got that much of the book left, which is maybe
not very
four
much.
Pages.
Yeah. And he dies in prison with his dad. The end. Oh.
And he gets in, comes across this old enemy under a pseudonym who is taking out his anger at Matt on his dad. And he manages to rescue his dad, and they escape from this inescapable place in this inescapable valley.
Black powder.
Pipe bombs.
He only had enough for that one big bang.
That's true.
You know? But it did get, you know, it got them out, and it's like then when he goes and meets, you know, with his acrobat buddy and his dad and the slave girl they rescued, and they get to the city, there's his nemesis with some armed guards. And he kills his nemesis, and the guards are like, well,
he just paid
it's
us.
Not worth it.
Yeah. We don't want to die.
And they take off. You know, and that's where, well, son, I'm headed this way, and I'm going to try to become a pirate again. And the girl says, I'm going with him because that's the direction I need to go. And he says, well, I'll see you all later because I have to go this way to rescue the girl that I love. And it's like, off they go. If this place is that impossible to escape, where are all the legions of assassins
chasing them?
Trying to pick them off as they go their separate ways, you know?
Mm-hmm. Maybe that was in book two.
Yeah. And, you know, so I'm sitting here, I get to the end of this, and I go, wow, they sure wrapped up the end of this real quick. Oh, he's planning to write another book or two on this character. Awesome. He never did.
Nope.
Yep. I was all ready to locate and start book two to find out how he rescues the girl that he finally decides she's the one I love and I'm going to marry her.
The ultimate cliffhanger.
The Louis L'Amour series, if you want to, the Sackett's, the Jubal Sackett series about the Sackett family.
14 books long.
Okay, you may not want to read all of them, but those are the ones that I hear about, not just from Justin, but from anybody who's a big Western fan. There's this family and these characters, and there's lots of books, and they're really, really good. And it's Louis L'Amour, and he is a good writer. So if you want a nice series about characters that you can, you know, hold on to for a while and not have to be disappointed that there isn't a book two, the second.
This place that was supposed to be so impossible to get in and to
leave.
He
got in with nothing.
Right. And he like, there, okay, boom, boom, boom. Rescued
I mean,
dad.
He planned
rescued.
It for, you know, a billion years. Cause.
Yes. I mean, he thought things through. But
250 pages.
He didn't know the lay of the land, probably.
What about all those geographical maps? He didn't have one for that place? Did I miss that? He didn't have one for that place?
Nope. Because it was supposed to be a secret.
Right.
Nobody published any. Now.
The Yuga clan.
Now that he's been there, he could do a map of the parts of the citadel he was in and the valley and all that stuff so anybody could find it. But
there you go.
That was in book two.
Yes, of course. And that's really why they hunted down to kill him, because he made a map.
Mm-hmm.
Not because he escaped. No one's going to believe him. Oh, he made a map. Now we're going to kill him.
Yep. So, you know, that just, it seemed rushed at the end, whatever the reason. So, that was the parts that I didn't care so much for.
Yep.
Final
thoughts.
Because the end was rushed like that, I was happy that he didn't write a book two.
Well, no, book two would have been 100 pages, that's it. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
Right.
I'm serious though. I'm just glad he only wrote this one and went back to Westerns. But I mean, I enjoyed the book. It was more like a 50-50 thing here. I'd probably give the book like a 7.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much the same. I'm glad I read it. I do think it's worth a read, but
yeah.
Understand that at times it's gonna bog you down as a reader. You
and
know.
You're going to get fed up and be like, I need a break.
Yeah, and you're going to question else. The main character's motivation. Maybe read it over the span of like a year or two or
a year
ten,
or two.
Like he did.
Like
you know?
He did.
It's good. It's of the two Louis L'Amour books I've read, it's not my favorite, obviously.
No, not mine either. Come Suck It was definitely better.
But oh, yeah. I enjoyed it. It wasn't a bad book. I'll say that.
Oh, no, it wasn't a bad book. It's
Yeah, I'd agree with that assessment. Definitely not the kind of book that I would want to read in long stretches. Like, as far as... I might read a couple chapters here and there, but definitely... Because what I did was... I actually ended up finishing it the day before our original date mm-hmm. that we were going to have back in November. Mm-hmm. And part of that was before we, you know... I was like, okay, I need to read this much per week in order. That's what I do with all the books. I figure out how, either page-wise or how many chapters I got to get through
each week.
To get through, yeah, each week on each book. And I want to say I was almost done by the time we're like, oh, yeah, we're going to postpone it. And I was like, you know what? I just want to finish this book, and I really shouldn't have. I should have given myself more time to. I shouldn't have to continue it. But
yeah.
You know, I think that's probably the only advice I would give people if you're going to read this is
don't rush
through it. Yeah. Take your time.
Digest it.
Yeah, I probably would have enjoyed it a little bit more if
take
I had
each history lesson a week at a time.
Right. Yeah, like I would have only read maybe. 2 chapters a day if I, But other than that, I mean, like, it wasn't...
Or the first 2 paragraphs of the next chapter, because it's a cliffhanger.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You gotta resolve the cliffhanger.
Yeah. That's all you have to do.
So
keep going.
I would say it was okay. I mean, not the worst book, but, you know, not my favorite that we've read in this club, but, again, it's...
It's better than Maze Runner!
It's better than Maze Runner, right?
Yay,
way better than Maze Runner, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think 7 was a pretty fair thing.
Yeah, I'd give it a 7.
Yeah.
I read the first 3 chapters, and then a bunch of stuff came up, and I binged this book the last...
2 days.
Thursday night, from Thursday night on, all the way until I finished it like an hour before.
No, I was trying to binge last time. No.
So you're going like, when is this goddamn drum going to show up?
I forgot all of the
books. How many hours do I still have? How Yeah. Does this book never end?
No.
I forgot about the drum until it showed up.
And you're like, oh, yeah,
no, that's the name of the book.
That's the drum. And oh, and we're done with it? Yeah. Okay, cool.
No joke. I think the book was like 16 hours.
I think I
blinked
and missed it. What?
I think it was 16 hours audiobook.
It was
Thursday,
really
like
long, yeah.
Thursday night, I go, oh, how many more hours do you have? 13. I go, oh, you poor man. Poor sack.
Good narrator, though. Yeah. I don't know if you had the same one we did.
No, it was awesome.
Really good narrator.
Oh, so you listened to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
Well,
yeah.
I did too, just
yeah,
because
16 hours,
I have so many things 50 going
minutes.
On.
Yeah, and I was
I've
like,
learned to appreciate like an audiobook for the multitasking mm-hmm. abilities. Mm. I listened to it while grading. I listened to it while doing laundry. I listened to it while cleaning. I listened to it while playing a video game. Turn the video game volume down and listen to the, you know what I mean? Like, you can multitask. You can get other things
really
done while still
get
getting
that.
Books.
There's so many books that I feel like I would have enjoyed a bit more if I had listened to them.
Right. I do narrator. Like to sit and read. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I do like to sit and read, but sometimes I don't have as much time as I would like to sit and read. I'm getting older and I need more sleep, so I can't just stay up all night and read and go to work the next day like I used to do. I can't do that anymore. I know.
The only Audible I had to listen to was the Screwtape Diaries.
Yeah, the Screwtape Letters.
Yeah. Whatever that
is. I want to get into audio, but the problem is I'm much more of a visual person.
Right.
So when I listen to audiobooks, one thing I have a problem of... like my mind wandering and oh wait, I just missed a laugh.
What happened? There was a battle. He killed.
What happened?
We
wait,
can't
what did that
listen
guy?
To audiobooks together because I'm an audio audible
I'm an,
learner.
I'm an
audio
learner as well.
Yeah. So it's like when she goes, wait, what happened? I'm like, I need to keep
like,
going. I need to keep going. This train's not stopping.
So and I've tried, and the second reason being that I won't retain it as well if I listen
to
it.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You can read it as you listen.
Then what's the point of listening to it?
She's a faster reader.
The point of listening to it is that you're getting it visually and auditorily, and you remember it better.
I can just get it visually then.
Like, I could sit down and read this, but it's going to be 3-4 months.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very choosy with the things I read because I realize this is a 3 or 4 month commitment. Versus 16 hours.
Right.
So, like, just from a dyslexic standpoint, like, I live off
audiobooks.
Great
value in that.
Yeah.
And I get that.
It's just simple math, yeah.
No, absolutely. I like being able to do other things and still listen to the book.
There's some books you don't want to live with for 3 months.
No. I will say I've gotten...
Chestnut Man would not be... That was good, but...
I will say I've gotten a little bit better when listening to podcasts.
Yeah,
I want to
see it. I know.
I've been trying to listen to more podcasts lately, so I've gotten a little bit better about that, but... A lot of them are like 30 or 40 minute episodes,
mm-hmm.
and so it's like I don't know how I would do with like I have to psych myself up with okay, this is an hours long commitment. Like I'll get there eventually, but
unfortunately
just to say
for
I'm gonna
me,
listen to a chapter, I'm gonna listen to this much. Yeah.
I started listening to this right at the height of my busy season at work. I did a lot of driving. I finished it in less than 2 weeks.
Mm.
Just listening to it while I was
just
driving
listening
for work.
To it while I was driving for work.
Oh yeah, there's definitely
and,
merit to it.
And then the next thing I know,
we had to just postpone a couple times.
Postpone, and like
he's listened to.
I've listened to 7 other books
since then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, there's definitely positives to listening to audio. I'm not trying to downplay it.
I really laugh at that line from the new Ghostbusters. It's also an audio, but I know how to read. Like, I appreciated the guy's line, like the pompous ass that he was. I appreciated the line and laughed at it. But at the same time, I have learned the value of an audiobook. So I value both.
I wouldn't have finished the Screwtape Letters without
if it hadn't been,
no way.
Yeah.
I think that might have been part of the problem with Don't Point That Thing At Me. It was one of the few books I listened to on tape, and I had such a hard time focusing on it. I'm like,
that's not the audio problem. I forgot what I was going to say, but basically, I had a point, but it's gone.
It's okay, sorry. If you come back to it, it's
Is it about a drum?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Talking about binging it?
It's gone. Justin, you want to final thoughts?
It was a good book. I agree. David's about a 7.
Yeah.
I do wish there would have been a little bit more towards the end.
Yeah, I think we all agree on that, so...
But yeah, I would say definitely read it, especially if you're a Lewis L'Amour fan. So you
can, yeah, for sure.
Say,
yeah.
Hey, I have that one under my belt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
just, it's accomplishment. Check it off the list. Yes. It's done. It's good. It's a 7. Yeah, I would say about a 7 because there was disappointment, but there was some good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was too much good stuff sometimes.
And to your point, Justin, it probably would be cool to have on your checkoff list considering it's, what, his only non-Western? Like,
yeah.
That, yeah.
Well, he does have a book of poetry as well.
Oh, oh now we need to read this.
I'll skip
that. Not for book club. just see it. But it's like, I bet it's all Western poetry, though, so that's still Western.
I love my horse and my gun.
Isn't that beautiful sunset?
That horse is
out on the prairie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over the
plains. Wow, sorry, I'm just reading in the postscript. There's this little message that he had written after finishing this book. I am completing a Western and researching the second volume of the trilogy on Kerbyshire. Next to be on India. Reading Summa Oriental of Tome Pyres now. Later period, but good stuff. Wrote Drum in 60 days. 712 type pages, but much thinking before. The next book, A Woman Worth Having, will run perhaps 1,000 pages. So the second book was going to be much longer.
He A Woman Worth Having. Nice title.
He wrote this later.
Better title.
That's a good title.
He wrote this later in life, too, didn't he?
Yeah, something like that. A Woman Worth Having was going to be the title of the second book. That's a good title.
The only unused Bond title for a movie is, was it Property of a Woman?
Hmm.
Or A Dame to Die For.
No, from the books. Like, that's the only name they haven't used yet. For a movie, is Property of a Woman.
Oh.
It's like that. It's a good.
So we're gonna have, that's going to be our next female James and our female 007.
Oh, damn, that's good.
Sorry,
that
would be good. That would be good.
Just wanted to add, he mailed it off to his publisher, and apparently a few weeks later he got the return of the manuscript. It says, from his publisher, I am sorry to be returning the walking drum to you. I feel the book is certainly better than most historical fiction being published today, but at the same time, I think there is a general feeling among my colleagues, which I share, that the market for all historical fiction has been diminishing recently, and I know that you have a long-term plan in mind for which you want a long-term publishing proposal.
So he originally, it wasn't going to be published.
Yeah.
Okay, that puts a new spin on it. All right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But they phrased it as not the quality of the book, but the market itself.
Yeah.
The market, which is, you know...
But that makes sense why he never read
it. Like, it's not the book.
Yeah.
But it really is the book.
It's still a no, but they took the time to not be insulting about it.
Yeah, they did. And I mean, there is, you know, there is a market. You're good at Westerns. Let's keep it that way. You know?
That's what it is. Yeah.
And it's not that this was bad. And I think... Mm-hmm. Maybe if he hadn't gotten that back, maybe we would have seen...
Maybe we would have seen
A Woman
two.
Worth Having or whatever the title was.
They basically just lightly said, go back to Westerns.
Yeah.
Thank you, but no.
Goodbye, Matron Kerbyshire. Hello, Hopalong Cassidy.
Yeah. Last final thoughts.
Final thoughts. I had one about 6 minutes ago.
I'm sorry. Brandon still doesn't have his either.
I do have mine.
Oh, okay.
My final thought was, when we read Comstock Lode,
yes,
I said I would be interested in reading more Louis L'Amour.
Yes.
I have now read more Louis L'Amour.
Oh, no.
I'm done.
No. Go back to the Westerns. They're good.
The Westerns.
Jubal Sackett.
Jubal Sackett.
Worth it.
Justin.
Oh, yes.
Okay. That's like a final
nail
in the coffin.
Right?
Right. Since Lewis hasn't been here in a while.
Well, Wayne's Claws is one of
my final thoughts.
Yes.
I would agree that it's probably about a 7. Aspects that I enjoyed of this book really is it's covering a point of history and regions of the world that I am unfamiliar with.
Mm-hmm.
I did appreciate that. It's not one that's written maybe so much about, you know.
It's not the usual places.
Yeah, liked it. I liked that.
And I enjoyed that look into the different cultures in this time period.
Yes.
So, I recommend giving it a read.
Yes, for sure.
All right, Lewis, all right, what's our next book?
Drawing the next book from Les Tardis.
Make it a good one.
Oh, well, shit. The next book that we are reading is Ready Player One by Lewis Klein, suggested by Justin.
Yeah.
Ready Player One. Yeah.
I know the movie doesn't count.
No, the movie does not count because there's plenty of differences. Although
there's
the movie
things
was
in the movie,
good,
movie that weren't in the book and things
book.
In the book that are not in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's good to know.
In fact, the movie was well done enough that it inspired him to go write a second book, which didn't do so well, apparently.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
The movie inspired him to write a sequel book?
To write
book?
A sequel book.
Sequel book. Huh. And the sequel book apparently hasn't done very well.
We haven't read it.
I know Kevin Smith's in the
Ready Player Two.
Kevin Smith is in Ready Player One.
Oh, not just one up? Okay.
In the book?
Mm-hmm.
There's several people.
There's lots of people. You guys are 90s children.
The Audible version
for the 80s
that
kids,
I have is read by Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
Will Wheaton.
And Will Wheaton is in the book.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
So.
As Will Wheaton?
Yeah. Well,
as Will Wheaton.
It references people from the 80s and things from the 80s, games and all sorts of stuff from the 80s. It's a...
nostalgia film.
Yeah, for those of you who like 80s stuff, it's
And anybody
nostalgic.
Who is a major gamer nerd, Dungeons and Dragons,
video games,
all
that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Comic books.
We'll have a fun discussion about this.
Yes, I think we'll have a good discussion. This is a good one.
It's going to be a lively one.
Alrighty then.
Alright. Alright, we'll see you next
time then. What was the quote from the book? May there be a road.
May there be a road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Alright. Mm-hmm. Hey there, people of the interwebs. I hope you enjoyed our discussion on The Walking Drum by Louis L'Amour. Ha! Raise up your swords. Prepare for battle. The next book we're going to discuss in detail is Ready Player One. That incredible science fiction book, Ready Player One, the ultimate 80s nostalgia book. We have thoughts on this one. So I hope you enjoy these discussions. I hope you come back for a discussion on Ready Player One.